Gang Podcast, episode 196. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
Graham Thickens.
So excited I get to start Christmas shopping today.
Good. Phil Wilson.
Oh. Yes, it is that time of year.
Now, you guys will have to listen to the song at the end of the podcast because it is, in fact, a Christmas song.
Is it this one that's playing right now?
Yeah, or? Merry Christmas, yeah. Baby by, I forget his name.
Yeah.
Can you guys maybe put that call on hold?
Yes, sir. Right away, sir. I'm sorry. Man. It's the people from Waste Management calling me to tell me they're going to pick up the garbage late. Sorry about that.
Yeah. Like you didn't know.
Exactly.
Oh, my
There's
gosh.
So many bells going off at this time of year. You know, no what
kidding.
The heck?
No kidding. So who went to SMB MSB, the social media breakfast?
Well,
yesterday?
We were all going to go, but geez, strangely, I was the only one there.
Glad you got there. I feel bad about missing it.
Well, we had client stuff to do. I was actually going to bring my wife. We actually paid money, both of us, to go. And then we couldn't carve out the time.
That was
what
wonderful.
What kind of a turnout did they get, Phil?
Very good turnout. Probably, 150 folks.
Wow. For a holiday week, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And they basically had set up, it was at Coco MSP, and they set up the chairs around the old Grain Exchange pit, and it was really very cool. So we had a good time. Don Ball did a wonderful job of moderating the panelists of entrepreneurs. So it was good to see.
And it was about switching careers?
Yeah, it was basically about striking out on their own and doing their own thing. And it was very exciting, very fun to hear some of the high level of satisfaction that everybody had. So we had a good time.
Huh.
And it was always good to see a lot of good friends.
Well, I also noticed Julio tweeted a couple of pictures.
Yep.
And they have the board all lit up with messages. You know, the old trading board up above?
Yeah, the tweet stream.
Yeah, they hacked that to follow the Twitter stream.
Yeah, I haven't been down there since they did that. Okay.
Yeah, they've had that up quite a while. It's pretty cool. Anything with Coco MSP hashtag appears up there.
Yep.
I think. Yeah, and it runs continuously, I think, all day long.
Wow. That's pretty fun.
So whose career change was the most interesting? Did Julio wasn't on the panel, was he?
No, he hasn't changed careers, though.
So. Well, but he has. Well, that's true. But he has a sideline career writing novels, I hear.
Oh, but I didn't know he's writing novels.
But then have you ever known anybody who's worked at a newspaper that didn't write novels on the side?
No kidding.
I mean, that doesn't make him unique. But anyway, I was wondering, who all was on the panel?
I'm sorry, I'm looking for that right now. So talk amongst yourselves while I do
some digging. Remember reading, and I don't think I knew any of them other than Don.
And
moderator.
Well, I say, wait a minute, let me find it. Let's see, we had, again, Don moderated the group, and it was Amber Carter, who does a blogger. She did Amber Colored Life. There's also Angie Davis, who is the maker behind Bird and Bell, and you may, Bird and Bell probably got the most amount of attention because, Julio stood up to exclaim that they make the best iPad case ever. So you can look at just was gushing. I hope we got a free one out of the deal. But also Michael Maupin, who does Storyshed Media, and then Tracy Morgan, who did 30 Rock. That's Tracy is probably most notably known as a partner in the local chef, and she partnered with a chef and caterer to create Kitchen in the Market. So so a very interesting group of folks. It was worth the time and again, great organization. Think about that. 52 of these meetups, these gatherings. That is the more than any other SMB in the country. So
that's right. And it's not 52 years, right, Steve?
Exactly. Exactly.
52 breakfasts.
That's right. That's right. And so a new group is funding up to 10 Twin Cities startups a year. This Accelerate MSP, put a link in the show notes to that. Is this just yet another fund and they're just trying to get buzz and we're not sure what they're going to actually do? Or do you think this is real?
It's 200 grand that they claim they already have, but they don't say whose money that is. So I'm wondering, did the 5 or 6 board members chip in their own money to do
maybe,
that?
Maybe.
In which case, it becomes kind of like a Techstars type of thing. But then they say they have to raise more money. So that is the key, because they're not going to fund 10 startups very well on 200 grand. I mean, didn't they say they're trying to raise like 500 or 600 total or something like that?
About a $500,000. But I mean, the board members, you know, Ernest Grumbles, Tom Kiefer, Brad Lerman, Joy Lindsay. I mean, this is quite a group. So
two lawyers and an angel VC and a serial entrepreneur. And
And I don't know Steve Mercil and Jay Schrankler.
Steve Mercil ran Rainsource Capital.
Okay.
Splintered up and went away.
Yep.
Or it still exists, but it's different. I think they're now only doing debt financing, according to Pete Berkland, who was a former partner there. Right. So Steve's been the head of that. He's been a VC going way back. So he knows what's going on in the angel community, locally and nationally.
Well, probably one of the biggest stories of the whole week, and Tim, you've got to opine about this, because I have to admit my jaw dropped. Best Buy's digital savior, Stephen Gillette, resigns to go to Symantec as CIO.
Yeah, if you look at his background, though, this is not horribly surprising. I guess he could have hung out another year or so, but it seems like every couple of years the guy just goes to the next job.
Yeah.
And there's that great blog post out there that explains it all.
Yeah.
That was hilarious.
That was entertaining reading.
Too much too soon. We'll also put a link in the show notes to that, because it's worth a read.
Oscar Barnes.
I don't know. That struck me as anonymous grousing. I don't know. It's just like, you know, I would have a lot more respect for somebody who writes with their own name rather than just, you know,
but
drops the F-bombs and starts calling people names without naming himself.
Still working at Best Buy, though, writing something like that
would be cover.
a way to shorten your career.
Yeah,
well, you know, I don't know anything about Gillette. I really don't, you know, other than, you know, his history and his resume. But I also kind of harken back to the concept of, why do we work? We work to make money,
right?
And if somebody's willing to pay us more to do our work, I'm sorry, I may have to look at that too. But
well, Phil,
again, I don't know.
I would beg to differ, because I work for fulfillment and to add to the human race.
Oh, and you would only say that on your first.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead and try to make your car payment with that, by the way.
No, but you're right, Phil. They do pay those people at Best Buy a lot of money. You know, it's commonly known that those salaries are pretty damn high.
If Symantec turns around and starts wanting to pay more, I mean, you know, I don't know. But again, I don't know too much about the guy. But I think the points have been made that if you look at his resume, this is not uncommon for him to job hop. So,
I think what really happened here is that the new CEO just wanted to clean out the old CEO's hires. I mean,
maybe so. Yeah.
So I think that had something to do with it. And I mean, he's a high profile guy, and he probably saw the handwriting on the wall. He was already on the board of Symantec, so he knew everybody over there. So he found himself another position to go to, which is great.
Yeah.
Thomas Lee at the Tribune, when he wrote about it, surmised that it was, you know, there were too many new folks had been hired by the new CEO, a couple of them in particular, who kind of made Stephen Gillette superfluous. So the writing was sort of on the wall there once the new CEO started hiring his people.
Yeah, and to do a major IT transformation costs a lot of money, and maybe they didn't have it. So maybe he just thought that he couldn't do what he came there to do.
Could be.
To save the $500K that he bagged and put it towards the IT project.
No, you can't do that, because we all work for money. I mean, Phil said it, right?
Yeah.
Well,
except for Steve, who works
for,
fulfillment and world.
It's all about altruism.
World peace. Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
World peace.
Man. It's for the kids, man.
Well, so here's another story for you, Tim, about Kodak is selling their digital imaging patent portfolio for $500 million.
Yeah, it seems like a fire sale to me. There's a lot of good stuff in there, much of which wasn't ever fully commercialized.
I think the flash cube was the big one, right?
Very funny. Oh, there's lots of stuff. It's not only imaging, but also other things around imaging. So things like database and other as it relates to photography. So there's a lot there that could be worked with, and I'm sure that everyone bought it just so that to take it off the table. And to make sure that no one company had all of these patents.
Well, and it's interesting because Intellectual Ventures, Nathan Myhrvold, the former COO of Microsoft, that's his company, which, by the way, I just read an article, and I'll try to find it, that some guy has pinned down that there's roughly 2,000 shell companies that are enforcing these patents. And everybody's looking at, not everybody, but a lot of people look at Intellectual Ventures as one of the biggest patent trolls in the universe. And
there's a lot of them.
Yeah. But I mean, all these companies, Apple and RIM and Samsung and Adobe, I mean, all these companies have bought in to this primary protection fund, if you will. And that's really what this is all about, because it's Intellectual Ventures and this patent risk advisory firm, RPX Corp, that bought it. And then there's these 12 licensees that are pooling money, but it's all about protection. So it feels, I don't know, it feels like a big racket.
It is.
Like the Intellectual Ventures is a bunch of mafiosos. Of course, I got to be careful now because Nathan Myhrvold will probably come after me and for libel. But this is only my opinion, not the opinion of Minovate or especially Phil Wilson.
So, yeah.
I think they'll come after you anyway, but just because.
Yeah,
the beautiful
exactly.
thing about suing Minovate is there's no money there.
There's no money there.
Didn't
That's
get
right.
anything.
Based our
That's
business right. model. Based our business model on blood out of a stone. So.
oh man.
My God. Anyway.
But this is a sad way for the company to go down. I mean, it's the shell of a company. It will come out of bankruptcy, but it's sort of out of the imaging business. It's going to be rough.
Well, I'll tell you, you remember me, maybe I told this story before on the podcast, but God, this is probably 20 years ago, and I'm jogging along the river in Cambridge.
Well, that was that was a long time ago because you were actually jogging.
Yeah, I was. And I looked up, and there was the original Polaroid headquarters. And, of course, at that point, Polaroid was totally gone. And it made me incredibly sad to see that building and to know that this once prosperous firm was history. And then I think about Kodak, mm-hmm. And the brand and everything it meant to everyone for so long, and it's gone. It just...
I have a lot of friends that live in Rochester, New York, and that company was such an integral part of Rochester, and it's kind of like walking by a ghost town sometimes.
Yeah.
And it is sad because it was one of the great American companies.
Yeah.
Well, and it's that way if you drive through Detroit,
yeah.
And you drive along and look at all the shuttered shops and businesses and houses that are boarded up and all of that. And you realize, I should maybe sell some more Apple stock.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now is not a good time.
No, now is not a good time.
I think Kodak should, to start over, should just start buying up apps like Hipstamatic.
There's a good
start
idea.
Start a whole new life.
Well, especially with what company. Happened with Instagram this week. Oh my God.
Oh geez. Yeah.
Oops, yeah, so who deleted Instagram from their iPhones this week?
Not me yet.
Not me. No,
I so rarely use it, I never delete it.
Yeah, I don't use it that much either.
I was using it a lot, but, I don't know. It seems so weird now to usage has to be well down, I would think. I mean, it used to be sort of so fun and so innocent, and now it's like, you know, dirty.
Well, so basically,
but you think about it, though. I mean, I don't know, but I tell all of my friends and all of the places that I speak at, or you know, do presentations for, or workshops, or you know, even in casual conversation, it's like, no, you put it on the internet, it ain't yours. No, you put it on the internet, it's not yours. You know, it's just like you're giving it away when you put it on the internet. Just remember that. And so, I mean, this is not necessarily surprising that they would actually, you know, they had implied earlier this week that they would sell it for advertising.
Well, so they backed off their terms of service, but what they also did was to say, we're going to reserve the right to do this and we'll disclose it more in the future. So basically what they did is a humma humma, and they backpedaled a little bit and then said, yeah, but we're essentially, they're telegraphing that we're still going to do something.
We're just going to wait till things die down a little bit.
Exactly.
Cool off a little bit, and then we'll let you know what we're going to do.
Exactly. So, exactly. Yeah.
What got me is they said they were going to do it, and then didn't Kevin Systrom come out and say, we never said that? And I thought, wait a minute. Yes,
yeah,
you did.
Yeah, something like that.
It's like, hello.
Well, it was funny because to see my daughter do a post on Facebook, like, oh my God. And she immediately deleted the app. She just said, that's it. I'm done. I don't care what they say. I don't care what they do. It's like, whoa. Okay.
Well, now she can use Twitter filters instead. And
She can go old school and kick it with Flickr.
There you go. Kick it with Flickr.
Hey, wait a minute. I got a Flickr Pro account. I actually like what they're doing. I like the new app.
Have you used the new app?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
cool. I was just noticing you had referenced Hulu's pictures earlier from SMB, and I'm wondering if he took those with Instagram or Twitter filters or what he did.
I'll have to go look.
Those look like those are filtered, so.
Yeah.
Twitter filters is the way to do it, so you can be sure your photos are showing up in line, you know, right in Twitter.
The thing is that 90% of the people out there are clueless. So they're just going to go ahead and go along with. Now, I have noticed that like when I logged on to Facebook this morning, which comes up in my browser, you know, when everything loads, is they did have a notice that says, please take some time to review who can see your stuff. And there's little pop-ups encouraging you to go in and make changes and so on. And this is different. So at least they're notifying people of what's going on. And I think that's good.
Yep. Yeah. I always, every time I get those sort of notifications from Facebook, I'll go into the settings themselves rather than just the spot they want you to go look at, you know, because I want to make sure nothing else has changed.
Yeah. Yep.
I just noticed I've got 559 photos in Instagram, so I don't think I'm going to delete it. But pretty much every time I post one, I have it go to Flickr, and I see I've got 7,000 and some on Flickr now over the years.
Yeah, so you're covered.
I think, maybe I'm covered that way, so it wouldn't hurt to delete it. But doggone, I still like it when I look at it, you know, the web Instagram, which is fairly new.
Yeah.
Is cool. I like that. I mean, it started out as only an iPhone app, and it took them months and months to get an Android app. And then just a couple of months ago or less, they launched the web version of Instagram.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of excited to see what, Yahoo does with Flickr. My gosh, it's been such a unappreciated asset for so long. I'm sure they're going to be doing well. The new app is the latest, right?
Right. Yeah.
For both iPad and
it's alive.
Smartphones too, right? I mean, they came out with that app for all mobile tablet platforms, didn't they?
Right. Well, there's a photographer who goes under the pseudonym Thomas Hawk.
Yeah, I know him.
Yeah, Scoble's done photo walks with him and so forth. Mm-hmm. He absolutely reamed Flickr a new one about, I don't know, 4 or 5 months ago.
Oh yeah, I think.
And and so then he just came out maybe 2 days ago, 3 days ago, with another post singing their praises about how Marissa Meyer has really realized what an asset Flickr is, and let's make it modern and relevant again.
Well, so. The professional photographers, which he definitely is, I mean, they are much more inclined to want Flickr to succeed and much less inclined to do anything on Instagram now. You know,
yeah.
Because they have to sell their works. They have to live, you know.
Right, right.
They can't be giving it away all day long, so...
Well, we got to bring our guest on pretty quickly here, but I just wanted to just touch base on the last two bullet points in the show notes here, which is about Jason Calacanis shutting down the podcast network this weekend. You know, I watched a bunch of the shows, and they none of them were any good. I didn't think.
Well, the only ones that were any good were the ones that are continuing, the This Week in Startups and the Kevin Pollak talk show.
Yeah.
All the other ones were just horrendously bad.
They were just bad.
I mean, and he takes the, you know, this exit thing, exit blog post, and basically says that podcasting, you know, is not a, you can't be a breakout success doing podcasting when, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think Leo Laporte's done pretty well. Dan Benjamin is doing okay. There's a bunch of other people that are coming up and, you know, people are going to listen to this sort of, you know, this sort of recorded stuff increasingly, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't think podcasting is dead, even though Calacanis couldn't make any money. It's all about the content, and his content was really bad.
Yeah. It's, you know, podcasting is actually experiencing a resurgence. So I don't
think,
you know, just one guy can't get his shit together. I don't know if it's.
Well, plus he just knocked Leo off with This Weekend. I mean, you know, it's like, come on, seriously?
Yeah. So, that guy, he has a way of just sort of jumping on other people's stuff, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of how he did it with when he teamed up with Arrington. And of course, they've long since broken up.
Right.
But to do TechCrunch, they decided to go after Demo's thing, you know,
right.
And started. You know, started putting down Demo and we're going to do it better. And, you know, and then how long did that last before he and Arrington came to blows? I see he raised $300,000 for the podcast network that he shut down.
Oh God.
From a couple of guys, including Sky Dayton. You remember him? One of the founders of Earthlink.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Well, there goes that money.
Yeah.
$300,000 down the tubes.
Oh my gosh. Hmm. Well, then a Forrester just came out with a report. 84% of U.S. adults now use the web every day. That's no surprise.
Get out of town. Get out of town, really?
Half of us own smartphones, and tablet ownership doubled to 19% in 2012. So that's and we'll put a link in there in the show notes. But, you know, I think this internet thing and the mobile thing, it's going to stay around.
I think so.
I think it's going to catch.
I think it does. And now that the world didn't end, you know, we can go Mobile March and learn more.
That's right. You know, we didn't even talk about that. I am, I'm actually glad that we didn't,
me too,
burst into flames with asteroids hitting the earth. And well, let's bring on our guest. This is a guy that I've known for years, Kim Gerritsen. And, he's done a lot of great stuff, Living Home, and he was with Meredith Corp doing home publications and so forth, and now Ovative Group, which is they call themselves omni-channel digital architects. So maybe he can clarify and zone in on their value proposition for us. But he's going to talk about a bunch of stuff that he's involved in and things going on, and let's bring Kim on.
Yeah. And, I've known him probably even longer than you, by the way, Steve.
Really?
And it just goes to show that if we happen to run into you somewhere at like social media breakfast, we may actually put you on the podcast.
Yes.
That's right. That's right. So, Kim, are you on?
Good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
I'm well. Is there a birthday among your group today?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Why, yes.
Steve-o.
The young and handsome Steve Borsch is...
Yeah, and thank God all those Viagra ads are in my spam folder. Now I can start going through them.
Well, So you're kind of a Christmas baby, Steve. So yes. do you get two piles of gifts or just one?
Well, it's become two, but when I was little, I used to be so bummed out that I'd get one for my birthday. Well, this is for both birthday and Christmas. It's like, So, but I got over it.
Well, happy, happy.
Thanks, buddy. So tell us about what's going on in your world. I mean, can you just spend like a minute and talk about Ovative and what you guys are up to? And
sure. Yeah. So Ovative Group is 3 years old. And, you know, how we founded it 3 years ago was I had come out of Best Buy, where I was in strategy and innovation as liaison to the venture capital industry with our good friend Marty Nyman. And that was frustrating. I mean, look at Best Buy today.
Yeah.
It was frustrating because we found incredible innovation from the venture capital world. We just couldn't get it integrated into the way Best Buy was doing business. So so I brought that to Ovative Group. My founding partner, Dale Nitschke, was 23 years at Target, the last eight as president of Target.com. So he had the innovation of taking an e-commerce business from $2 million in 2000 to $1.2 billion in 2008.
Yep.
And third partner, Sev Maynard, was a strategy guy at Best Buy in digital media and mobile. So we're 3 years old today. We have 15 consultants. The bulk of our revenue comes from retail, and we do business management consulting across all things digital, mobile, social, local. How, as a retailer, do you optimize all those channels and touch points with your customers? So our clients are, for instance, Meijer stores in Michigan, Sports Authority, Toys R Us, Kohl's, et cetera. About 20% of our revenue comes from venture capital-backed digital media, mobile, social, marketing startups, mainly from the left and right coasts and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And there they, because of our network of big retailers, big brands, especially the consumer packaged goods brands, and agencies, these companies retain us to help them find new customers, help them refine their marketing messages, and get their innovations into big customers.
So can you just, I know this is a little tangential to what we wanted to talk about, but, you know, Dale's on the board of, is an advisor to 8th Bridge.
Right.
The startup here. And who, by the way, just published a really great social commerce report. And how big of a deal is mobile and social commerce, e-commerce, I should say. And how much is that 5% of your advisory right now, or is it higher than that, or is it a huge trend? Is it something that everybody should watch?
Well, it's definitely a huge trend. I can't peg a number for how big it represents in our advisory services, but one reason it's a huge trend is in what we call online to store or shopper marketing. Online to store means there is now technologies that not only can reach shoppers on mobile, social, local, but can track those shoppers' journey into physical stores and pulling items off of shelf and through point of sale. So you can actually see the measurement and effectiveness of what you're doing in mobile and all digital marketing by how the cash register rings.
Yeah, yeah.
And so dollars from brands, the CPG brands, the consumer electronics brands, those dollars are moving away from broad, you know, shotgun like marketing messaging to, you know, more of these integrated marketing campaigns where they can watch in real time what happens at the cash register. Sort of almost, you know, as effective as, say, the Omniture suite and other things in e-commerce, where you can watch what happens in your shopping cart based on, you know, how and where you're advertising.
Hey, Kim, this is Graham. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Graham. Good.
Good. Hey, I got a question for you.
Okay.
Are any of your clients pure online? I guess there are pure online e-commerce companies with no brick and mortar.
Let me think. Actually, I don't think so. I mean, we did some work for Alice.com. They're no longer a client. They're competing with Amazon and Soap.com in terms of your consumables.
Well, the fact that you don't have a lot of this, you can speak to this trend then. What do you think about the trend of the online-only e-commerce sites, the Amazons, the eBays, and so forth? And some would say this is a trend, going to brick-and-mortar stores as well. We're hearing a little bit more about that here and there. Isn't eBay doing it? And I've read certain startups that were pure online are suddenly going, you know what, maybe brick and mortar isn't such a bad idea. Yeah. What are you seeing there?
Well, I think it's interesting. You know, one reason that these companies may be looking at that is real estate is so cheap now, because there's obviously an overabundance of retail real estate. Mm-hmm. I think it's also interesting in terms of trends, like Amazon is investing and experimenting with lockers in, you know, office building parking lots where they can deliver your goods, even your fresh and frozen groceries, into lockers that you pick up on your way home.
So there's less pilferage off front porches.
Exactly.
Yep.
So, you know, I think some of these innovations that, you know, go beyond just opening up a storefront are pretty interesting. I would watch the storage locker business. In fact, Google just acquired somebody in that space too. Can't remember.
Interesting.
Well, what are big customers doing in the Twin Cities? One of the things I've always looked at is Best Buy and Target and General Mills and all these really big organizations are they obviously want to do something that is materially impactful to their business. But how many are still blocking and tackling, and how many are already incorporating all the things that we're learning about psychology and neuroscience and predictive analytics and geolocation and all of that? I mean, how many are really pushing the envelope, and how many are really doing kind of the basic blocking and tackling stuff?
I'm seeing, you know, since I left Best Buy 5 years ago, I'm seeing a lot more openness by the big customers in the Twin Cities. Certainly our big retailers, you know, our big CPG, General Mills, United Healthcare, a lot more openness to find ways to experiment with all this technology. And in some cases, they're turning to their agencies to do that. And interestingly, agencies have long put up barriers to this innovation for several reasons. The primary one being the agency business model is billing their humans. And when you bring them a technology that obviates the need for human capital, that goes against an agency's business model. Also, agencies are risk averse. They know that even startups with a Series A venture capital, fewer than 20% of them even stay in business 2 years. So risking your relationship with your client by embracing these early stage companies has long been a barrier. Third, these new technologies put the strategy and campaign plans of agencies under the microscope with real-time results. However, in the last year, guys, I've seen quite a shift among agencies. In fact, I'm doing work for one of the WPP holding company agencies that told me about 6 months ago that they threw up all these barriers to innovation for their big retail CPG consumer electronics clients for the reasons I just spelled out. But they said about 8 months ago, their clients called and said, we give up. There's too much. We've stopped reading TechCrunch. We want you, the agencies, to find and experiment with this stuff. Also, open innovation. So, you know, to date, many big corporations, R&D has been pretty siloed and internal. But again, with so much innovation coming from so many places globally, I'm seeing open innovation. Marty Nyman at United Healthcare is running open innovation, which says, let's open up questions and problems to a bunch of partners or even the wide world and run contests and the like on answering questions or solving problems. So I'm seeing open innovation open up among big Twin Cities companies too.
That's cool.
That is cool, especially.
How long has Marty been over at United Health?
More than a year.
Wow, I lost track of that.
Yeah, no, he'd be a good interview because he talked about how he's going to sponsor contests and the like to open up big questions about healthcare reform to a much wider world in terms of solving problems.
Which side of the business is he on? The insurance side or the Optum side?
He's on the insurance side.
Okay. Interesting.
Huh. Well, especially with what's going on in the healthcare space, and I discovered it doing a study of the under 100 bed hospital space that the average gross margin for hospitals in the U.S. is 2.8%.
Almost as bad as a grocery store.
Oh my God. And under 100 beds, it's between 1.5 and 2.
Amazing.
As gross margin. My God.
Yeah.
You know, and they're facing nursing and physician shortages, and then they're getting hammered on by all the stuff they got to put in place with electronic health records and everything else. It's pretty stunning. Hey, how do you choose your go-to-market technology partners? So I'm looking at your website right now, the ovative.com site,
right,
and you've got some really interesting technology partners, and obviously, they're fulfilling needs that you have, but
right.
How do you get involved with them?
Well, here's how we choose. Because we spend so much time with retailers and brands and increasingly agencies. In fact, I didn't mention that about 10% of our revenue comes from consumer packaged goods, the big guys who pay us to find innovation as early as possible for them because their agencies are starting to look for earlier stage technology. We have the network of the venture capital industry where often they use us in due diligence. So we see companies before the VCs have written checks. So because we spend so much time with the retailers and the big brands, we know where their pain points are, where we know what they've tried and failed with, et cetera. And then mainly through word of mouth, because we've been doing this so long, we talk to 4 to 6 new companies a week. We'll give any new company that seems to be a company versus a guy with an idea, we'll give them an hour to present their stuff to us. And because we've all been operators at big retail, we play the role of customer, and that's how we vet and validate these technology companies that come to us.
Do a lot of them reach out to you, Kim, sort of in their analyst relations mode? Do they find you and seek you out?
Yes, they find us.
Yeah.
So,
or you get referrals from...
Correct.
Investors or, yep.
Correct. So do you want to hear about a few?
Sure.
Yeah, especially.
I was just going to say, we'll talk, because we had a discussion yesterday about a few companies that you're working with that are very exciting. And there's a couple there that I'm pretty excited about.
Yeah, well,
me too.
Well, You guys all know TST Media here in town,
yep.
correct?
Oh, yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
And you know they crank out thousands of stories about high school sports, for instance. Did you know that no humans write those stories?
Huh. Really?
A technology called Linguistat writes those stories. So if you drill into one of the high school sports stories from Linguistat, you'll see the byline says by Linguistat. So Linguistat is a Silicon Valley company that has amazing technology that can take things like the product specs or the results of a sports event, and with a style book, and the style book would have rules such as, you know, use these cliches and turns of phrases about sports every second paragraph, et cetera, et cetera. So you write a style book and then you feed, you know, just raw data specs into Linguistat and it writes copy.
Oh my God. I would assume then that those rules could be acronyms that are industry specific and things
Absolutely.
Of that nature.
Depending on the rule.
Brilliant.
Book. So we're taking this company into e-commerce. So, you know, the problem today with big e-tailers and their big vendors is the e-tailers, you know, they might be turning to a group in India or Mechanical Turk to have a block of product description copy written at, say, $5 a piece of copy.
Yeah.
Or in more often they ask their vendors to send product images, product specs, and a block of copy describing the product. The problem there is SEO. Google does not like the same block of copy describing the same Nikon camera at 300 websites.
Yeah.
So with Linguistat and e-tailers, they'll be able to ingest the raw data from vendors, the product manufacturers, and not only generate unique copy to their own e-commerce site, but depending on how smart that e-commerce site is in terms of knowing the inbound traffic, they can dynamically generate different blocks of copy for different audiences. For instance, a piece of apparel aimed at a teenage girl, she hits that dress site and there's a block of copy written to a teenage girl audience. Mom hits that product page and there's a block of copy written to mom in terms of buying this item for her daughter.
Wow. Of course, you know, here's the problem, though. The problem is Ray Kurzweil now went to Google and he believes that the singularity is near and soon the internet will become sentient and it'll just write the copy itself.
Well, I think that Linguistat is on that path.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah. How long have they been using it? TSC been using it, Kim?
I'm not sure. Quite a while, I believe.
I see a connection between their VC,
correct,
Jeff Hink, and one of the board members of Linguistat, who's my old friend John Borchers.
Correct.
They exactly. work together at Crescendo Ventures.
Right. John made the connection.
That certainly makes sense.
Nice. Right. Nice. Well, I would assume that one of the differentiators, and also one of the things that would separate e-commerce from bricks and mortar, because you know the whole issue about bricks and mortar is the claim has been, and many people believe that you have to be able to touch and feel in order to make a decision, and yet with social commerce and also with enough stuff surrounding the product so that people can have decision support. So they can look at a video and watch somebody actually hold it and touch it and talk about it and lots of photos and copy and, you know, yada, yada, yada. The more that you've got there, the less you really have to go and hold it.
Correct.
And touch it. So I'm assuming that's the path you guys are on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, what else is going on in content marketing?
So we have, I'm biased, but I think we have the hottest content marketing platform out there, Publish This. In fact, Gartner just said it's one of the two hottest content marketing platforms. It's publishthis.com out of LA. And it was built by the team that built and ran Edmunds.com, the $200 million a year auto lead gen site.
Yep.
And these guys are smart because they figured out how to use search to bring people down the decision funnel on buying a new car and get them to the bottom of the funnel where they were a very qualified lead for a new BMW and then sell those leads off to dealers. So this is a three-year-old company, published this. They spent the first year or so building the technology, especially the semantic search, which, you know, can point at the wide web. They currently pointed at 250,000 websites, but a user can point it at, say, the 100 top blogs in a vertical area. What it does is it really precisely filters the best signals from all that noise for a content marketer, a curator, to look at what's coming inbound in the search queue, and then annotate and edit the search results to then publish out to real-time feeds as content curation. So examples, all sports at AOL now, Sporting News is their sports topic partner. If you go to aol.sportingnews.com, above the fold, you'll see the content generated by the Sporting News staff. Below the fold, you'll see thumbnails and headlines and excerpts of sports from all over the web, including from competitors, ESPN and Sports Illustrated, all curated and powered by Publish This. If you go, Rafat Ali, when he sold paid content to The Guardian, he's now started Skift, S-K-I-F-T, a media property about innovation in the travel industry. Rafat has one editor who, using Publish This, filters all the noise about innovation in the travel industry and publishes a really nice property, skiff.com. So what we're doing with Publish This is taking it to retailers and brands. This trend of the last couple of years, brands as media companies, retailers as media companies. How do you do that if your DNA is not that of creating content or even curating and aggregating content?
Well, and you don't want to start a magazine or a newspaper type infrastructure in order to support a property. But if you can create a destination, like Skift, I remember when I was at Vignette and one of our biggest customers was Travelocity, and they did some amazing things with screen scraping and being able to bring in stuff from hotels and doing all kinds of stuff. But then people would change things and they were constantly modifying their algorithms and their scraping capabilities to try to stay on top of changes. And I think it just got out of hand and it was just too tough. But then they got big enough they were able to do some pretty interesting things. And it's funny because on skift.com, I see in there where it says Skift curates, and we'll put a link in the show notes for everybody listening. Cruise Critic is there. And this is a site that I became aware of in 2004. It's a place that anybody that cruises goes there to find out about shore excursions and all kinds of stuff. And it's one of those under the radar sorts of things that nobody pays attention to until you look at the site and you really get into it and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
They've created a destination for anybody that cruises. So of course, guess what happens? Everybody in the industry, all the cruise lines, all the shore excursions, everything, everybody advertises there. And
sure.
So, boy, what a goal if you're Target and you can create a curated destination site that's incorporated into your e-commerce platform.
Yeah, one thing to look at Skift is you'll see a little colored block of text in many stories that says Skift take, and you'll see 20 to 50 words where the Skift editor has written their point of view, their take on the pieces they're curating.
Mm-hmm.
Now, an interesting story. So Bruce Clay, very well-known SEO guy, you guys probably know who Bruce Clay is. He's an advisor to Publish This. He has a very popular SEO blog. He shifted to Publish This about 3 months ago. Prior to shifting to Publish This, what he was doing was scanning the fire hose of his newsreader, Twitter, all of this noise coming in, picking out a piece that he thought was interesting to post about.
Manually.
Manually, reading that piece, writing, you know, say a 200-word post about it and linking to the original post, about 30 minutes per post. He's now shifted to Publish This, where he can more quickly scan the best stuff brought in by search within the Publish This platform. He can copy and paste a relevant excerpt from the source. He can retitle the source and put his own image in it and write a 20 to 50 word point of view. Mm-hmm. He's down at about 5 minutes per post in his blog, and he's page ranking the same on five minute posts as 30 minute posts.
Wow. So the question is now, what does he pay a month for that?
What is the cost for Publish This?
Yep.
Yeah, the cost for Publish This is for a corporation or a publisher, it starts at $1,500 a month, and that's based on the number of API calls to the feed you curate and the screens that you're distributing that feed to.
Mm-hmm. So he, as an individual blogger, might be paying that much?
He might be.
In this case,
he's an advisor to the company.
Yeah, so he may not be. But still, he probably makes so much money off his blog that he can afford it, too.
Right.
And, yeah, but it's like anything else, though. If you do something and you get the page views up, you can then turn that into advertising revenue easily.
Exactly.
And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah. He's a media site is what he is, like Skift is. And so
I'm sorry to interrupt. Yeah. This is just fascinating, Kim.
Yeah, it is.
Oh my God.
But my question for Kim is, so what happens to all the content creators at the companies that are using these, how do these companies position their solutions in that regard? Because certainly the paid content creators within the Best Buys and the paid content kind of sites and all sorts of media sites must wonder what this is doing to their livelihood, right?
Yeah, especially the two I talked about. So Linguistat eliminates the needs for human to write copy, and Publish This brings it all in and curates it like Google News. I mean, you know, what happens? Well, they need to reinvent themselves. By the way, on that 1500, I don't have the pricing yet, but WordPress plugins are coming from Publish This. So,
let me know.
Yeah, the blogging world will probably have a cheaper solution.
Oh yeah, we'll be all over that.
Can I tell you about one more?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're coming up on the end of the show, but go for it. Yeah,
I'll be fast. So Quantifind, out of Palo Alto, Quantifind, Quantifind. These guys literally are PhD rocket scientists from Stanford. They've operated in stealth for about the last 3 years, and now they're coming out of stealth. And what this is next generation, not just social media monitoring, but actually the ability to extract true intent. I call it an intention engine. So right now they're just working with the Hollywood studios and the video game makers, and they're taking all the social chatter and other unstructured data about movie trailers or about commercials for new video games, and they're pulling out of that data who among everybody buzzing about something is actually going to show up the first weekend of the movie release or on the first day of the game release.
Yep.
Now we're taking that technology to brands and agencies. But just one quick story. So a movie studio was pretty sure their movie was aimed at teenage guys. So they cut the trailers in that way. The social chatter came back and said, no, the movie is going to be equally appealing to young teenage girls who are going to go in groups to this movie to see one of the stars of the movie. The chatter also was hinting at a rumor of a cameo by a very big star in this movie. And the quantifying tool said, you should recut the trailers and readjust the media mix to highlight that cameo. The studio had predicted in the 20 millions for their opening weekend, and they did 36.
Ooh.
Wow.
That's real money.
Yeah.
Wow.
Real money.
Pretty cool.
That's real money.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Hollywood likes money.
Exactly.
Well, Kim, it's great to talk to you and be educated about what's going on, because it's really important, I think, for everybody to understand just really how big this is. Cause you know, we're seeing, we talked earlier before you got on about Instagram and the changes in their terms of use and all the things that Facebook does when they make changes and so forth. And people are really uncertain about geolocation and about being tracked and cookies and yada, 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 yada. But by the same token,
it's like, whatever. Yeah. But there's everything about me. I don't care.
But there's a real lack of understanding about some of the really big tools that can really accelerate value.
Sure.
And so it was really great to hear this stuff. And
happy to do it. It was fun. And again, I usually have two or three new goodies in my bag. So if you want to do this again, happy to do it.
Sounds great.
Okay.
All right. Have a great holiday, Kim.
Yeah, you too, gentlemen.
Thanks, Kim.
Thanks, Kim.
Take care.
So, wow. You know, a couple of those things that he's working on have real world applications in some of the stuff I'm working on. So it's like, oh, really? That's great.
I know.
Let's talk about that.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Curation.
Is so handcrafted content dead, though, if you can get a machine to write it?
No, it's not. No, as long as there's people to bitch about the employee, you know, the executive team at Best Buy, there will always be an opportunity to write.
Well, but also when you look at the fact that you know, spam commenters and blogs have done an end run around by coming in and quote unquote authentically commenting, and the authentic comment is, "I really like this post. Period. It's really great. You did a great job, and I really like your blog. Period." You know. It's like, seriously, because then what they're hoping for is you'll approve the comment and then they can come in and spam the hell out of your blog. No, seriously, right. That's exactly the strategy. So it's, you know, after seeing one or two of those, you're pretty quickly can identify the algorithmically based or the bot based commenting. And you just like, I mean, come on, seriously.
Yeah, it's not like the legit comments that talk about the Nikes that are on sale somewhere.
if it was only as benign as Nike's.
Yeah, I know.
Or like the spam I got yesterday. Is that you in that video with your pants down?
You didn't even need to look. You just said, yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Graham was like, I don't really recall that, but
which
but
one?
I should maybe go look. Yeah, which party? Or which event? Was it the collaborative event that I pulled my pants down at? My God. Well, you know, guys, I think we're out of time.
I just wanted to follow up our Instagram piece that with a story I just saw this morning, which Flickr is giving away Pro for 3 months.
Oh,
for anybody. Cool. So I put that into the show notes. You have until the 4th of January.
Thanks for bringing that up, because as a pro user, they're giving me an extra 3 months.
Yeah, right.
So they're not screwing us that we
paid. Everybody can go there and extend their pro subscription.
Very nice.
Very nice.
Yeah,
very nice.
It is.
Those guys, I'm telling you, what a swell bunch of Joes.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we've got the same events, so we don't need to maybe go through that, but want to give a little teaser to the fact that our next podcast is what?
The prediction show.
It's the prediction show.
Oh, right.
Do we recap our predictions from last year by any chance?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna have to eat some crow, but you know.
That's all right.
I'll have to go back and look. I don't remember what I predicted.
Yeah. I listened to it this week. I believe
Steve predicted the end of the world. So,
no, he predicted that the world would not end yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
So Steve is absolutely right on his first prediction.
It was, stuck his neck out on that one.
Yeah.
And I went on long about why Apple would never do a 7-inch iPad.
Right, I remember.
And they're going to sell.
Well, but it's sort of technically correct, though, because it's 7.9 inches. It's not 7 inches, right?
Dun, 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 dun. You're dancing, buddy.
The 7-to-8-inch tablet.
Right.
What a frivolity as we mock our predictions from last year.
That's right.
We're going to do that next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care, boys.
Thanks. You sure did treat me nice.
Merry, Merry Christmas, baby. You sure did treat me nice. You bought me a diamond ring for Christmas. Now I'm living in paradise. I'm feeling mighty fine. I've got good music on my radio. Calvin Owens on my radio. I haven't had a drink this morning, but I'm all lit up like a Christmas tree. Santa come down the chimney, 3:30. He left all those beautiful presents, baby, that you sent to me. Merry, Merry Christmas, baby. Christmas morning. Christmas, baby.